Live from the center of the Razorback universe.
The only radio show Razorback fans need to listen to.
Unbiased and unafraid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ruskin and Zach.
All right, ready to go here on a... I'm not going to say it. Here on Thursday.
What were you going to say?
Zach, on a Thursday. I hate when radio people say that. No one talks that way. You don't go into, hey, Bob, how you doing on a Thursday? No one talks like that. Only meathead radio people say, hey, welcome on a Thursday. Oh. How you doing? WNBC. It's Thursday. And we're glad you're here. I'm Ruskin and Zach. And I'm in a terrible mood. So that means it's going to be a good show.
You're both? Cool. I'm out.
That's right.
See you.
That's right. Exactly. You can text us at 866-285-4005. What are we going to do about Ty Richardson? What are we going to do?
Man.
What are we going to do?
You know, this is 2 days in a row with them.
What are we going to do?
I got a call last night.
And by the way, if you're going to do these stunts of swearing and talking about, do it in the middle of ratings. Today, we're out of ratings. Come on. Help us out here, for God's sakes. We're drowning.
So I got a call from His Eminence, Tommy Kraft, yesterday. And he apologized. He owned it, his gaffe in the morning. And I thought the landscape was, you know, the dust had settled.
I think there's no fine here. If you have to sit next to him for 3 hours every morning, I think you should be able to use the F word. That's what I think. This is outrageous.
Okay.
This is outrageous.
So
what's the latest we have here for those that aren't aware of what's going on?
You want the sound first?
Yeah, give me the sound.
So long story short, Ty Richardson, host of The Morning Rush, eats ketchup on his steak. Now, he accused me of not using context in a Twitter poll that we will get to very shortly. Ty, here's your context.
Last night, right as I'm eating my healthy meal, my buddies hit me. He's like, hey, my roommate's like, hey, Ty, you want a steak tonight? And I look at them.
I'm just
shaking my head, and I said yes. So I had two dinners last night, had some sweet potato fries and a steak. Jay grilled it up nice, but you're going to be really dissatisfied with what I did last night. So I originally got out the ketchup for my sweet potato fries, and then I Patrick Mahomes didn't put it on the steak as well.
What?
Yeah, I just
ketchup on the steak.
Yeah, that's a Patrick Mahomes signature.
That's an insult to the cook.
Well, listen, Jay,
is something wrong with the steak?
No, it's good. I just like ketchup.
You like ketchup with your steak?
I had never had it with the steak till last night.
I did when I was a kid, but I grew out of it real quick.
Yeah, like nine, you know?
Yeah. I used to put ranch on steak too. I don't.
What?
Damn, boy.
I have no words. I guess that's
You should have been better just not to say that out loud.
One of many faults.
So, it goes on. So there's
Morning Rush Jenkins is way better than Midday Jenkins, by the way. Yeah, I love Morning Rush SmackDown. This is great.
He's awake at that time of the day. He's taking naps in the midday. But we're not here to bash him. We're here. I feel like this is an accumulation foul. I feel like this is what just happened was we had a breakthrough in therapy. And we've suddenly gotten to the root cause of the issue. I mean, this is a dude that wears rompers, drinks White Claws, and got a mullet willingly.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that we have now hit, we've hit rock bottom, and now it's time to start building him back up. But you have to take him to task on this. You do not, under any circumstances, put ketchup on a steak. Ever.
I mean, unless the steak is, from one of these... You know, $5 joints.
Yeah, if it comes out of the back of a truck frozen.
And there's still marks where the jockey was hitting it. I guess it's okay then.
Then maybe. But he doubled down with me. He's like, well, you didn't add context to this. Well, there's your context. I don't care what the context is. Ketchup and steak don't go in the same sentence.
I thought the most embarrassing thing to be said on this air this week would be that as a child, I had suppositories when I couldn't duty.
Ty said, hold his white claw.
And Ty said, hold his white claw. That's right. I mean, I don't know. I learned this a long time ago. Ty is a lot younger than I, so maybe he doesn't know this. But the rule is, I believe, if the steak is cooked correctly, it needs nothing.
It needs nothing, no.
Maybe some mushrooms. I like some little button mushrooms to go with it. That's delightful.
Perfect. Delightful.
That's a vegetable. That's acceptable.
I made the phone call after I was made aware of this situation. I made the phone call to him, and he goes, how did I know this call was coming? Because you're an idiot. Yeah. And it's my job to bring you back in line. he wouldn't let go of the point. Sometimes
that's his problem. That's the problem.
Is it?
He's wrong, and he won't admit. Okay,
hey, I am the king of doubling down on idiotic bets. However, that right is right, wrong is wrong. Ty, you're wrong in this particular instance.
Can you just imagine? And this will never happen now. But, you know, when I work with Kraft, we'd end up at some fairly nice steak places from time to time on the road and stuff.
Tommy's not
You can't take him there.
You can't take him to Waffle House.
You can't take him to Prime 112 in Miami and go, can I have ketchup, please?
No, you're taking him to the buffet at a strip club because that's where he belongs. Sometimes you don't have to hit send.
Take him to you can go to Lone Star and get ketchup with a steak.
No,
you probably need it there.
Too high class.
Logan's.
You don't have to hit send on a tweet, and you don't have to say things like this.
Yeah.
But now he's in bunker mentality.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, can I come on and talk? No. You can't talk to the firing squad.
No. And here's the other thing. Like, you have a show. You don't have to call other shows. You can say anything you want about us in the morning, and we won't know because we won't be awake.
I'm ashamed that we have to start here today because we have other stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
But frankly, exactly. We have a terrorist in our midst, and it's him. I've always suspected.
Did he say ranch?
Yes, ranch on steak.
Oh.
Look, I understand that, you know, and he's very proud of his 501 heritage. He says, you know, we're built differently down there. Well, this is clear.
Yeah.
Here's your news flash, Ty. The 501 doesn't claim you anymore. They don't want you. You might be a 318 by the time this is over.
When's the last time you had a sauce of some kind with a steak?
1989.
Okay.
I was a junior in high school. I didn't know any better.
Right. Yeah. I learned this lesson. I don't remember where I learned this lesson, though, but... I learned that a long time ago that, hey, if the steak is cooked right, you don't put anything on it.
I mean, where can we take him? I mean, we're going to see him in a month.
I don't know.
Where are we going to take him?
Why would you want to... I have this question as well. Like, why would you want to forfeit all chances at going to a nice restaurant on the company dime?
Right.
Because you can't send him anywhere now.
There's an undervalued mishap here. Ketchup on sweet potato fries? Ty... What are you doing? He's very one of his major things is to post things that he eats before he eats them. Like, you know, today it was a pizza thing. Well, Ty, you know, right now he's disavowing what he said and he's running away from the fact that he eats ketchup with steak. You don't eat ketchup and sweet potato fries. You don't. Regular fries,
okay. With regular fries.
I got a text from Keith over at CJ's. Keith's offended. Ty is banned from CJ's.
That's not good.
That's a bad sign, man.
Yeah. That's no good.
You are not welcome there.
Yeah. Well, what about A1? Again, I mean, if we're going to get a $4 sirloin, you're going to need some A1.
Yeah. Tommy Lawrence tweets in and he says, where the hell did y'all find him? He does not represent the 501.
Is
he a 405? Is he Oklahoma City? I mean, where do you...
918?
Yeah, he can be Tulsa. But he cannot live here.
Oh.
I want him out of the four borders by 5 o'clock.
Okay.
Someone please escort him to the border.
That's right.
Just get him out. Just
throw his clothes over the state line. Hit Roland into.
Just.
I don't know, man. I just don't. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've eaten some bad steaks before, but I mean, I've never even in a thousand. That's not even an option.
No.
Your option is don't eat it or put A1 or 57 on it or that's it.
Here's a text of the 479. The only place that you can eat a steak with ketchup is Chuck E. Cheese. That's acceptable. Ty, that's your crowd. They'll be doing remotes out there by the time it's over.
Oh, man. Here's a guy that went out to Oscars 15 years ago on the company, had a big party. Guy ordered prime rib and put ketchup on it.
Well, that's the other thing. At the end of the clip, Ty doesn't know what kind of steak he ate.
Oh, boy.
I mean, look, if there's a profiling question, you put a piece of steak in front of somebody and they don't know what it is, out. He had no idea. He thinks it was a prime rib. So he put ketchup on a prime rib.
Oh, boy.
That he said was cooked magnificently. Not that he would know, but...
Yeah, how would you know? It's covered in Heinz.
Yeah, even PETA thinks you're a jerk, Ty.
Yeah. Yeah, this is cruel and unusual treatment of a dead animal. I don't know, man.
He's not invited to the company Christmas party. I'm in charge of that.
There's a company Christmas party?
No.
Okay.
But if there was, he's not invited.
Theoretically speaking, if we had a company Christmas party.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, we just can't.
The invites are ready to go. You know, it's just a venue and food and some other stuff.
I'm just wondering what kind of crappy steak restaurants you have to go to growing up where you have to do this.
I also blame the waiter. You don't.
His friend cooked it for him.
Oh, okay. I thought they were out. But his friend should have stepped in and said, "No, man, you don't do that."
All right,
Ty, you got till five.
This is not good.
It's time to get ugly.
You're listening to Ruskin and Zach.
All right, we're back here. It's 18 to the hour here on the program, and we're pleased to be joined by our next guest. You can hear him on ESPN Radio Sunday mornings from 6 to 9 a.m. Central Time. He's on the SEC Network. He's on Sirius XM every morning. Peter Burns joins us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. Good afternoon, Peter. How you doing?
I was just trying to figure out, is that rejoin that you guys use from commercial break, "It's time to get ugly"? Is that just because I was coming on?
No.
Like, I feel like that was my own walk-up music. Like, I appreciate that.
Little backstory on that. We're kind of like, you know, at a bar at 2 a.m. and, well, we're your last choice.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Just kind of like you're the sloppy stick,
yes,
basically, at that point, where you're just like, you know what, I've had a couple of cocktails. We can't talk to anybody else. Might as well get Peter Burns on here. Well, I appreciate it, boy.
Peter, what happens is these things, you know, in radio, these things are on a rotation. And I sit here every time we have a guest on and pray that doesn't play before the segment. And today it happened to, and we feel awful about it. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess, at this point.
Well, no. So what's funny is my first radio gig ever was in San Antonio, Texas. And we would pre-record these traffic updates like, you know, 10 minutes before. You know, they give you the traffic, what's going on. And then I would always throw it to the traffic person. And after I realized that I would talk to the traffic person and they didn't talk back, I realized that they were taped. So what I would do is I would just throw it to, like, the most outlandish thing. And I'd be like, and now let's go to Rusty, who has whose mom is 7'2", and his dad has yellow and only four toes. And he'd be like, all right, thanks, Peter. Let's talk about the traffic on I-10. And it just became a shtick that everybody, you know, at least kind of had some fun with. So, I understand how it works. So I don't take offense to it.
Hey, Peter, before we get into actual sports news, have you ever eaten steak and ketchup?
No. And if I do, please just end my life at that point. I don't feel like that's a good decision. I mean, me and Booger McFarland almost came to blows at the SEC Network when I found out we went out to dinner one night after a show. And he ordered a well-done steak. I was thing worse than eating a well-done steak is eating a steak with ketchup.
Yeah, yeah. You just need to be on a no-fly list.
That's not good.
Seriously, at that point, I don't trust the decisions you're making.
That's right. Yeah, it's a.
Wait, why did this get brought up?
Our morning host went on the air and mentioned that he tried steak and ketchup for the first time, and we're trying to decide what to do with him.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, trying it is one thing, but then actually deciding that you're going to ruin a good steak with ketchup is two different things. Like, you could try things you don't like at least once and just be like, yeah, that was horrible. So as long as he doesn't go back for a second serving, he's good.
No, he's going back.
I think he is. We're talking with Peter Burns from the SEC Network here on Ruskin and Zach. I don't know. I saw Alyssa Lang talking to Pittman the other day. I don't know if you've talked to him yet or not, but what are your thoughts observing the Arkansas program and what you've seen over the first 6 months, even though Arkansas hasn't actually had a physical on-the-field practice yet?
Yeah, I feel like I know about as much as the team as Coach Pittman does, and that's just because of the pandemic and what's going on right now. I mean, you know, I've probably talked to him maybe three or four times, and again, it's just the energy is there, and it's just a football energy. Not to say that Chad Morris didn't have it, But with Pittman, you can tell that there's just enthusiasm that, hey, I'm here. Like, I cannot wait to be a part of this. And, you know, he's trying to pull out, you know, the Arkansas out of what one of the worst, you know, two or three years that program has seen in a very long time. And, you know, I think there's no quick fix, especially in the SEC and more importantly in the SEC West. You can't just snap your fingers and think things are going to get better. You have to build the foundation. And when I look at Pittman, I look at what Jeremy Pruitt's trying to do over at Tennessee, which is, hey, you got to get good on the offensive line and defensive line. You can do those two things, you're going to be able to compete at some point. The question is, you just can't flip your fingers and snap your fingers and make that much better. So it's not going to be a quick fix for him, but and it may not look pretty the first one or two years, but the foundation of a good football team, especially in the SEC, is where he has his, you know, he's made his bones recruiting him today.
We've had a chance to sort of see him up close and see sort of the what he's doing with the program. What's the perception of Sam Pittman outside the borders of the state of Arkansas?
Well, I mean, hell of a recruiter. And there's hell of a recruiter, a guy that, hey, it's not real nonsense. He's not trying to sell you something or a used car. He's just trying to say, hey, let's go have some fun. Let's play some football and get excited about it. And I think that's good. I mean, the only negative that I heard is, hey, this guy hasn't been a head coach, right? He's been an assistant coach for a while. And so, you know, what are you doing? Is this kind of like when Matt Luke took over at Ole Miss, which he did a good job, but was it enough to get to the next level? Obviously, it wasn't for Coach Matt Luke, because now Lane Kiffin is over there. So I think the question marks for him are really more just a managing the time and expectations. Like, there's no doubt Coach Pittman knows everything about football you need to know, right? He's been there at successful programs. He's been coaching for a long enough time. My issue is that, hey, do you know how to fundraise? Do you know about doing all the ancillary other things that come with the head coach? And that was the thing that I've learned from Dan Mullen, from Muschamp to Kirby, is when those guys finally got elevated to be a head coach, they didn't quite understand all the other things, the fringe things that went on with being a head coach. It's not just coaching your football team. There's 9,000 different things that take up your time.
Absolutely. We're talking with Peter Burns from the SEC Network here on Ruskin and Zach. What about Tennessee? Are you a believer in they take some sort of step forward this year? I mean, if they awarded a trophy for winning the offseason, I think Tennessee would probably win it right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, you know, I remember a couple of years ago where we thought Jeremy Johnson, the Auburn quarterback, was going to win the Heisman, and that didn't turn out too well early, right? I think it's positive momentum, and I think it's a blueprint for what Arkansas should do as far as, hey, get good recruits, get solid. You don't have to be real flashy, but show some improvement going forward. You know, I think that, you know, they can upset one or two people here. I still don't think that they're a contender in the East, but you know, Coach Pruitt is doing things that, you know, a lot of people thought that he should, as far as the way that he's recruiting. And he's got, it's weird because when Butch Jones was there, it felt like he over promised a lot. And I'll never forget when we first launched the SEC Network, I was in Coach Butch Jones's office and I said, you know, before the cameras started rolling or after the cameras were done, and because he had sold, hey, we're going to be here, we're going to be there, we're going to be do awesome. I said, well, you know, cameras turned off. And I said, Coach, why, you know, do you really think you're going to be that good? And he goes, well, let me tell you this something, Peter. He goes, I got two choices. One, I can say, man, we're going to be the best thing ever, and people are enthusiastic, and we live up to that hype. Or what's my other alternative? To say, well, we're not going to be that good, and people don't get excited about my program. I'm like, I'd rather get everybody excited about the program and then try to deliver. So I always found that to be interesting. Pruitt's taken a little bit more of a subtle approach, and frankly, I think it's worked for Tennessee right now.
Big news out of the conference today was that Alabama and Ohio State are going to play in a few years, and Alabama wasted no time patting themselves on the back. This is a program that hasn't played a true non-conference road game since 2011. I mean, since we get out of the BCS era into the playoff where they encourage you to actually go play somebody, are we going to see more and more and more of this out of more teams from the conference?
Yeah, we're seeing, you know, Georgia's doing it. LSU did it with Texas. We're seeing Alabama do it. And really, guys, I think this is a product of we all kind of see the writing on the wall. The college football playoff will likely expand. when the current deal is up in 2024. And when that happens, then it's not going to be, hey, one loss can doom your season. You know, you can have one now, especially if it's to a quality opponent like Ohio State or, you know, a Texas or an Alabama, and it not ruin the year. So, yeah, I think that's good. I think that's solid that Alabama's finally getting that non-conference road game. And I do think that we're going to see a whole lot more of that. The problem is, you know, these schedule openings are, what, 7-8 years down the road? Like, who the hell's going to be the head coach over at Ohio State and Alabama at the time? Because, you know, honestly, it probably won't be Coach Saban. And I can't imagine him being there 7 years from now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he scheduled the entire Pac-12 one year. He ain't going to be there. That's not his problem.
And I saw the other day, Peter, that Mississippi State and Washington State are getting together, but it's like in 10 years. So, I mean, I don't even know if Leach will be... He could be out on the boat fishing by then. I mean, he may not be...
There's no telling. But that's the issue. And, you know, that's what I love about college basketball. Like, in Fayetteville, it's like Eric Musselman says, hey, I want to go play this team tomorrow. They can figure out a way to get it on the schedule. In football, you just can't. But, I mean, again, that's just the way of the world, how we live. And now I'm just hoping that we do get college football here in the fall.
Are they? We're talking with Peter Burns. When are they letting you guys back in the studio? Like, for television purposes?
Man, my wife was looking at me like, get the hell out of the house. We need to be in the studio. So, I would imagine we probably get back in the studio late July, early August. You know, traditionally, guys, after College World Series, we take about 8 weeks where, in the studio term, is we go dark, where we don't do any shows. So this is kind of at the end of when we would just have kind of that summer vacation because school's out. But I would imagine we'll get back in late July, and then, you know, I mean, it is going to just be a sprint starting in early August to get it going.
Yeah. All right, Peter Burns, you hear him on this radio station on Sunday mornings from 6 to 9 a.m. and on a Sirius XM SEC channel and on the SEC Network. Peter Burns, thanks, Peter, for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, boys. Can't wait to be back on again with y'all. Y'all have a good one.
All right, appreciate it. Peter and all our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. I hate when the Time to Get Ugly thing plays before a guest
comes on.
And I always forget to check it until it's time.
Well,
like that, the music starts, I'm like, oh,
that interview got moved up. So,
well, that's
yeah, he apparently has an engagement.
He was supposed to join us later, but we got him on right there, and we appreciate him making it work for us, because it would have been a lot of guys would have just said to hell with you and just not answer the phone. But
not him.
It's a good guy.
Yeah,
I was on an airplane with him once.
Really?
But I didn't say anything to him.
I mean, I looked at Marcia Clark and went, ugh. Then come on.
That's right. I didn't say anything. No, I didn't.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. All right.
And this, well, the league, by the way, the SEC Network, he was in a first class seat. So, I mean, hey
all right.
Hey, they're doing all right over there.
Before they got the Longhorn Network, all the money went away.
All right. 866-285-4005. It's Russ Good and Zach back in a moment. People have had their eyes on Razorback baseball and what's happened with the baseball draft. And for more on that, we bring in Kendall Rogers from D1Baseball.com joining us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline. Kendall, thanks for the time this afternoon. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. It seems like the draft might be the only positive thing going on right now in pro ball.
No, that's exactly right. Today has not been another in a long line of bad days in pro baseball. But as far as... the college game goes, some discussion, I guess, Casey Martin goes to the third round. What were you surprised that he went there? What was your reaction to that?
You know, I was a little surprised he went that low. I mean, I think the thing with Casey is there's no doubt there's some swing and miss there. There's no doubt his strike zone awareness needs to get better and things like that. But I'll tell you what, I think that's an incredible talent for the third round. I mean, you look at a guy who... You know, in the past has proven to be an elite hitter at times in the Southeastern Conference. You've got a guy who has shown that he can certainly play third base. I think outfield is going to be his position moving forward. But, you know, he's shown that he can be a good defender. And you add on top of that the fact that he has power and he has premier speed. I'm a big Casey Martin fan, and I get it. He was pretty much terrible to start this past season, but I tell you what, he's one of those guys that he can end up being a consistent MLB All-Star if all the pieces come together. If he plays in pro ball the way he did as a freshman, he could be an absolute star at the next level. So I think that's a terrific pick to get in the third round.
Bigger surprise for you, Heston Kerstad goes second, or Casey Opitz doesn't get drafted at all?
Probably Casey Opitz not getting drafted. I think when you look at this crop in this draft, I wasn't too sold on all the catchers. You know, you had Austin Wells and some guys like that, but really you had about two or three quality college catchers, and we all know that's a very important position. But when you look at Casey, really good catch and throw guy, really good leader. He's got power in the bat. The bat continues to get better and better each year. And I certainly would have taken him in the top five rounds. But here's the thing about Opitz. It could be one of those situations where you almost kind of have to talk to him, because there may be a situation to where there was a team that was willing to take him, but it wasn't anywhere near the money that he wanted. So he figures, hey, I'll go back to Arkansas for another year and then go back in the draft. So there are going to be some money at play there. I just can't imagine that from a sheer talent standpoint, he doesn't get taken in the top five rounds. He is clearly, without a doubt, a top five round talent. And hey, Dave Van Horn, love to have him back. Well, that's a huge piece to have back next year.
Yeah, that's getting a five-star talent back. My follow-up question to that is, he gets a couple of guys drafted. He gets Casey Opitz back. That's pretty much a wash if you're Dave Van Horn. I think it settles some of the numbers. But what about the two high school kids that got drafted?
Yeah, there's no doubt. The couple of those high school kids that are going to lose certainly hurts. But, this is kind of where – you look at what Arkansas has done and kind of the transfer wire, with A.J. Lewis out of Eastern Kentucky. I know they've been in it for T.T. Bowens out of Central Connecticut State. I'm not sure where he's going just yet. But, Arkansas will be fine with those high school kids. I mean, I think when you look at this team overall going into next year, the good news, I think Arkansas will once again be very solid. The bad news is I think the SEC is going to be insane when you look at how many teams bring back premier talent. So, you look at the Hogs with Casey Opitz back. You look at the front end of the rotation, and Connor Nolan and Patrick Wicklander both being back, and Robert Moore in the field. The list kind of goes on. It's going to be wash, rinse, and repeat for these guys.
Yeah, we're talking with Kendall Rogers from D1Baseball.com here on Ruskin and Zach. We were talking about that last week, Kendall, where the Razorback baseball program has reached that status where it just kind of pieces go away and it regenerates itself. Put another way, they don't rebuild, they reload right now. And very few teams, I think, accomplish that.
No, you're right. I mean, that's a differentiator between what I consider to be a good program and what I consider to be a premier program. I think when you look at Arkansas, a lot like Florida, a lot like Vanderbilt, they are the same team pretty much every year. Now, there'll be some years where they're just not quite as good, or they're a little bit better. But for the most part, The average there is pretty much around the same every year. So, this is a testament to certainly Coach Van Horn. It's a testament to the commitment to facilities and recruiting and things like that, and certainly the job that Nate Thompson and Matt Hobbs do in recruiting. Those guys recruit as well as anybody in the country, and not only do they recruit well, they evaluate exceptionally well. They run that roster very smartly.
I read a stat the other day that it's the last 10 years, Arkansas has had the second most players drafted in the major league draft. And you can add, two more this year. What is it about this program, Dave Van Horn, that, like you said, it's just rinse, lather, repeat, and they just keep, this cycle keeps going. They've got, and it's in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which is not exactly, on the way to anywhere as far as college baseball goes.
Well, I think that's one of the beauties of college baseball. People always ask me, hey, why, you've had opportunities to cover pro ball, but why do you love college baseball so much? And I think it is because of stories like Arkansas. You look at Mississippi State, and I'm not comparing Fayetteville to Starkville. That's a very unfair comparison. But when you look at college baseball, you have all these college towns where these programs, no matter whether they're in a big city or not, they can be really good. And how are they really good? By hiring good coaches and creating a great fan base, building premier facilities. And actually, I think when you look at Fayetteville, it's kind of funny you mentioned that. It's not on the road to anything, notable. But, when I go up there, I love going up there. I think it's a beautiful area. It's really nice. So I think a lot of kids, whether it's from California, you know, they've had, you know, success with Don Fletcher and guys like that in the past from California. I think a lot of kids probably go there thinking like, oh, they probably have a nice facility, but I wonder about everything else they get there. And they're probably kind of like, well, this is really nice. It's kind of the first thing I thought the first time I ever went to Fayetteville back in like the late 90s, early 2000s. So it's a testament to pretty much everything in the works there in that program.
Is that the difference? And we're kind of in a boom period, I think, for college baseball, where that now you probably will get better training facilities, all that behind the scenes stuff at an Arkansas or an LSU than you would like in some of these minor league clubs.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I was reading a tweet from an MLB writer the other day that I was kind of laughing at. You know, one of the pitches these organizations were making to these kids that are, they're trying to get to sign for $20,000 as non-drafted free agents is, oh, you're going to get better teaching and better medical treatments. Like, I don't know about those guys, but they clearly have not been to some of these SEC schools. You know, even Wake Forest, where Matt Hobbs was before, you know, Wake has one of the best pitching labs and training setups in college baseball, and that's Wake Forest, not to like throw those guys down the stairs. I'm just saying, you know, if Wake Forest is like that, imagine how some of these bigger programs are. So, this notion that pro ball has a better setup in these two aspects is laughable, because college baseball, you know, unless you're in like a low major team or low major conference, man, college baseball is all, just about as good until you get to the kind of the double A and triple A level.
The rules next year are going to be crazy. The season will look different this year. What's the biggest rule change, if you will? Is it the expanded rosters, the scholarships that Dave Van Horn and his staff are going to have to face? Because this we're heading for something that, quite frankly, they've never dealt with.
Yeah, I mean, the roster being unlimited is pretty big for all these programs. But I think the main thing for me are those two prongs of, you know, being able to give up to 32 players scholarship money and to be able not to give a guy 25% scholarship. Those two are huge. Because therefore, you know, if you're Arkansas, let's say you don't want to run off six kids, you've got 42 guys on the roster, you can give all those guys some sort of money. You know, or you know, you can give 32 of those guys some sort of money, whereas before it was a much lower number. So I think that's a big deal. I think what would be really, really interesting to me is see how many of these prongs stick moving forward. Obviously, after this year, I don't see an unlimited roster happening. I just don't think you're going to get that. But I do think there's a sizable chance that we will get a 32-player counter and have that 25% rule abolished, because I think it should be abolished. If you're college baseball and you're a partial scholarship sport where people are making, or you have 11.7 scholarships, and a kid that lives in Fayetteville is willing to go to Arkansas, live at home with mom and dad, and only be on 5% scholarship, if you're U of A, like, why can't you? You know, why can't you just give the guy 5% if that's all he wants? So I've always thought that rule is really stupid.
We are talking with Kendall Rogers, D1Baseball.com, here on Ruskin and Zach. One of the things, as time goes on, Dave Van Horn is very, very outspoken on changes he wants, like some of these that we've discussed here with the college game. And it seems like a lot of the times, maybe not every time, but he gets you know, his voice matters. It resonates and there are other voices as well, but he's on that short list of voices that speak and about how to make the game better, and people listen.
No, there's no doubt. I mean, the interesting thing about Dave is, you know, for instance, on this new baseball model they're talking about, you know, he's not one of the premier voices on that, but he's one of those guys that, like, you know, he's kind of hard-nosed. He kind of stays in the weeds a little bit. But when he talks, people do listen, because it's kind of like one of those things, like, hey, if he's talking about it, then obviously it's a pretty big deal. So, you know, it kind of comes with the territory. And I think the interesting thing about Dave is he's been a lot of different places. He was at Northwestern State. You're dealing with a totally set of circumstances in Arkansas. You look at his time in Nebraska, he was at a cold weather school with terrible facilities, built that program into a monster at the time, and then now he's in an SEC school. So, you know, having those three different experiences certainly gives him a treasure trove of knowledge, so to speak. So, yeah, I mean, people definitely listen.
When this thing gets started up next winter, where will Arkansas be? Top 5, top 10? I know around here people were kind of upset when Arkansas rolled in the bottom half of the top 10, outside the top 10 at the start of last season. When this thing kicks off next year, where will they be?
Yeah, you know, they'll be in that top 10 range. It's a little early now just because you don't know exactly who's going to be on campus, especially with these undrafted free agents. But, you know, the thing about Arkansas is, like, yeah, Arkansas fans were a little angry that they were at the bottom of the top 10 going into the season. But, hey, if you look back at the beginning of the season, they were not playing like a top 10 team. I think we all agree with that. So I think our inclination on Arkansas going into the year was probably accurate. I think this is a team that would have certainly figured things out as the season progressed. But I'm excited about next year, you know, for obvious reasons. I think when you look at the fact that we didn't have a season, I think fans are going to be excited. I think the players are going to have just unlimited energy every weekend. And certainly I'm looking forward to it. I'm just hoping we're in a situation where we can actually play baseball. Thankfully, we don't have labor unions arguing with the Major League Baseball and vice versa, the owners being bad guys. And we don't have that in college baseball, so I'm hoping we have baseball in a few months.
Play Knight, Isaiah Campbell, all had this history of making this massive jump from their second to third year. Is Connor Noland ready to take that jump?
Yeah, you know, I feel like he is. I feel like he's incrementally gotten better. I mean, his first year, I think we all kind of saw like flashes of it. He's a physical guy, had a little bit of velo. I thought last year he took a step with his velocity. I thought the secondary stuff got a little bit better. And so, yeah, I mean, you're looking at a progression here where he should have a very good year. I think, you know, Wicklander for me is really interesting. He was a guy coming into the season I thought was going to take a big step forward. But, boy, he really struggled with the game I saw at the Shriners College Classic. So, you know, he's a guy that gets a clean slate. And he's got good stuff. He just has to be able to command it. He didn't command it very well when I saw him against, I think it was Texas. It seems like it was like 9 months ago now. But yeah. I think that was against Texas. And so, you know, if you're starting with the foundation of those two guys, I feel pretty good about your chances moving forward.
Kendall Rogers covering the sport as good as anybody at D1Baseball.com. Thanks for the time today, Kendall. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, fellas. Have a good one.
All right, Kendall, our guest, join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach.
Unbiased and unafraid.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
It's 26 minutes to the hour here on the Ruskin and Zach program. David Cobb covers college basketball and college football for CBSSports.com. And he joins us now here on Ruskin and Zach on the Williams Tractor Hotline. David, thank you for the time today. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, doing all right. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. We appreciate it. Of course, we're having you on, and if the folks aren't aware, there's a piece that David wrote on CBSSports.com about Eric Musselman and the overhaul that the Razorback basketball roster is undergoing right now. And there's a couple of mentions there about this this formula. Is this like the formula to Coca-Cola or the 11 herbs in space? Is this like does Musselman have kind of a he's not willing to give away all his secrets on that? Just kind of tell us about that little part of that conversation.
Yeah, I was pretty amazed at the level of detail. I mean, I guess I shouldn't have been. I mean, a successful major college basketball coach who's been coaching for over 30 years, has been a head coach of two NBA teams, has a pedigree in the profession. But it was just interesting, I guess, to hear him talk about how they sort of deduce whether or not a transfer is going to be productive in their program. And so they had a formula, like you say, at Nevada that was pretty much nailed. So depending on what tier of play or what conference a player was coming from, they could pretty well predict going into the season how productive he was going to be, what his percentages would be, how the stats like rebounding would transfer and translate to that level, and they're still refining it at Arkansas. So that's why I think this upcoming Arkansas team is going to be really, really interesting, because there's so many transfers, and you know, that formula that they had in Nevada is being tweaked. And so I think he's interested to see how closely they've got some of these projections nailed on some of these guys.
I find it interesting that when, you know, a lot of coaches will go into a new job and they're basically just trying to replicate what they had. He saw that what he was doing at Nevada had to be tweaked and they had to come up with a new formula and a new system. How commonplace is that? And, I mean, this guy is so detail-oriented and so interested in the analytics part of it. Is this sort of where basketball is heading as we move further into the 21st century?
Yeah, he was talking to me about how just intense the competition has gotten on the transfer market. And so, I mean, regardless of where you are in the pecking order of college basketball, you've got to have a pulse on the recruiting as well. And so I think it just really worked out in Arkansas's favor that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but one of the best in-state classes, you know, in recent memory in Arkansas in 2020 for them to pick from. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be part of what they're trying to do moving forward is a blend or a mix because the competition for the transfers is just, especially when you think about the fact that in all likelihood, in the future, there won't be the requirement that players sit out. I mean, everybody's going to be in the transfer game. And, you know, it may not be that sort of niche thing like it was for him at Nevada. It's going to be a mainstream thing in a normal way for coaches to rebuild their rosters. And so he's going to have to continue, probably, I would say, tweaking and adjusting the system as he gets it off the ground here. But his track record, I think, is one that suggests he can do it.
We're talking with David Cobb from CBSSports.com with us here on Ruskin and Zach. You know, being here and most fans really only being interested in what's going on here, we see this guy come in here, and he's a totally different approach, detail-oriented. And I'm curious, is this unique, or is this how the rest of the sport at a high level operates, and we're just getting to see it in the state of Arkansas for the first time in a long time?
I just think the NBA experience makes him different. I mean, there really aren't a ton of, I mean, hardly any former NBA head coaches who are now college coaches. And Eric Musselman was a head coach of two NBA franchises. And so, you know, yeah, it's been close to a decade now. He was, or maybe even over a decade, since he was in the NBA. He's been in the G League and stuff, I know. But, you know, there is an absolute prerequisite for that level of detail in the NBA. I covered the Grizzlies before I joined CBS Sports, and the level of attention to analytics, to the details, is just off the charts. You know, Eric credited his father with kind of being on the front end of that. He credited Hubie Brown, a coach that he worked with in Memphis, for helping sort of show him the way in terms of analytics. And so, I think it's absolutely going to work in his favor that he's incorporating those things in the college game. He already has worked to his favor at Nevada. And so, I think that what Muss is doing, I wouldn't be at all surprised if after a year or two of success at Arkansas, if he starts to grow a college coaching tree where some of these assistants who are working for him now get opportunities to be head coaches. And then maybe 10, 15 years down the line, as Buss's career is wrapping up, I could see him having a couple of guys who have worked for him who have also gone on to be head coaches at the college level.
If this continues, where he is constantly bringing guys in and turning the roster over, when they start or when they tip off next November or whenever they wind up tipping off, I mean, he could have one or two guys have worn a jersey in a game. Kentucky gets kind of they were kind of the standard bearer for turning a roster over every year. Is this sort of the new wave? Is this how we're going to do it? It might not always be freshmen, but you're going to see this constant turnover.
I love the Kentucky comparison because if you think about nationally over the next several months leading into the new college basketball season, everyone's going to talk about Kentucky and the amount of roster turnover that they have. But the fact is, right now, they're on track to have eight new players playing. Now, they could get waivers on a couple of transfers and be up to 10, but they'd be on par with Arkansas in terms of the number of new players. But I don't think that Kentucky's situation is enviable. I think that Arkansas could very well have a better season than Kentucky due to the fact that some of these guys who are coming in, looking at Justin Smith, looking at Vance Jackson, Jalen Tate, all grad transfers, and then a couple of the sit-out guys, too, who sat out last season, have college experience already. And then, you know, of course, if you get Isaiah Joe back, then you know, that changes things as well. So Arkansas's got a lot more experience than Kentucky does, and they've got a comparable I mean, honestly, a comparable freshman class in Kentucky. So I think that Kentucky is going to be way too overly reliant on freshmen, and I think that could be a Kentucky team that loses 11 or 12 games and gets into the NCAA tournament as an 8 or a 9 seed. Honestly, I think if I had to project the SEC right now, I might put Arkansas ahead of Kentucky.
Wow. We're talking with David Cobb from CBS Sports here on Ruskin and Zach. So let's kind of extrapolate that a little further. What kind of ceiling are we looking at here? Arkansas hasn't been to a Sweet 16 since 1996. And many people are optimistic that this is the guy that's going to break through and finally put Arkansas in the second weekend of the tournament again.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd be lying if I said that Isaiah Joe's decision doesn't have some bearing on my, sort of my calibration on this team. I think if he comes back, yeah, Sweet 16. You know, I think that's a realistic goal. Now, I the one thing that I kind of don't love about college basketball, obviously the tournament is just awesome, one of the best events in sports, but it's a little frustrating sometimes when a program or a coach or a group of players, I think, are judged entirely based on what happens in March. So I guess I would look at it more from a standpoint of win total. And this was a 20-win team last year, 20-12, if I'm not mistaken, and I think they're probably a 23 or 24 win team in the 2020-21 season, and maybe even a couple games higher than that if Joe comes back.
There's a ton of talent on this team. In reading your article, I mean, you list the four freshmen and then all the transfers, and Desi Sills comes back, Ethan Henderson's still on the team. I mean, his biggest issue right now is minute management. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's going to be a new challenge, I think, for Eric. Nevada, he was explaining it to me, and it makes sense. When you only have 13 scholarships and you got four transfers sitting out every year, which he says he did at Nevada, four transfers sitting out every year, your rotation manages itself because you've only got nine scholarship players that are eligible to be out there. And that was sort of the case for Arkansas last year with three transfers sitting out and then, you know, some injury problems, and so the rotation to a certain degree managed itself. The competition is going to be, I mean, I think pretty intense. I'm looking up and down this roster, looking at recruiting rankings and how productive guys were in their previous colleges and some of the returning guys, and I've got no idea how to make a depth chart for Arkansas right now. I'm sure Eric knows how to do one, at least to a certain degree at this point, but I mean, a lot of that will be hashed out in the coming months. But, I mean, I think that's ultimately what you want, is an internal competition where, you know, there's no real sense of entitlement for guys. I mean, obviously, if Isaiah Joe comes back, you know, he's in that starting lineup and he's getting his shots. But after that, I mean, honestly, a lot of guys with talent who are going to be, jockeying for minutes and for roles.
David Cobb is our guest, sports writer, CBSSports.com. Got the piece on Eric Musselman up right now on CBSSports.com that you can check out. He is joining us here on Ruskin and Zach. And another thing that's that I've lived here my entire life, I've never seen anybody so willing to market the program like Musselman. He'll do any show, any interview. I think he was just on your colleague, John Rothstein's podcast. He is just... I don't know how he gets all the energy between all of the putting everything together for the basketball team and then to appear on, to talk into any microphone that'll have him about what he's got going on here at Arkansas. There's never been anyone here, David, that we've seen that's been that willing to market Arkansas basketball before.
I know, right? And you wouldn't necessarily expect that from a guy with an NBA background because that's all taken care of in the NBA. You don't have to do that. You don't have to worry about that. But I mean, kudos to him for realizing the power that he has as a college coach. I remember that video, I think it was shortly after the pandemic started, where he's like in the gym blowing the whistle and like barking out orders to nobody.
Right.
And
yeah.
Like, I mean, it was like pretty funny, you know? Yeah, I appreciate stuff like that. You know, he called me. I'd reached out to the school and been like, hey, I want to talk to Eric Musselman. A couple days ago, I didn't hear anything, and I just get a call out of the blue. It was him on a cell number, you know. I didn't answer the first time because I thought it was somebody trying to sell me health insurance. And I was like, all right, well, that's refreshing. Like, I just, you know, get the call. You know, don't even have to really, you know, go through any middlemen. That's kind of rare in today's environment. So, yeah, I give him an A+ from my vantage point in that regard. You know, obviously, I haven't covered him like as a beat writer necessarily, but he seems to really get it, I guess, in terms of understanding what it takes to be successful in the college game outside of just the X's and O's, just the recruiting. And for a guy with a professional background, that's not a given. So I give him props for that.
When I was reading your article, the thought just occurred to me. I mean, the guy won 20 games last year in his first year with a roster that, quite honestly, was not up to par. He wins 20 games and he's willing to blow it up and start over again with guys that he wants. How rare is that in college basketball? I can't think of a coach in any sport who said, you know what, bleep it. You know, we won 20 games, let's start over again.
Yeah, I do think that's pretty rare. There was already going to be some attrition on that roster anyway, like just because, you know, there were some seniors, I guess. And I mean, Mason, I don't think anybody could have foreseen Mason Jones having the season that he did. I think Mason Jones saw what we're good at, because I know he was good before last season, but and he put the work in, you know, and so he probably knew that he was ready to take a big step forward. But, you know, I just wouldn't have thought necessarily that he would be a guy who could legitimately have professional aspirations after last season. But, you know, he really played well. So I think in a sense, like, you know, they just sort of ended up with more spots than maybe they expected. And so, I mean, the one guy that I'm really excited about is Connor Vanover, because when you just look at how small Arkansas had to play a lot of times last season, I mean, to have a 7'3" guy that you can now trot out there who, oh, by the way, shoots three-pointers and, oh, by the way, is from Arkansas, that's going to be exciting, I think, to see how they sort of utilize him. Maybe like a Brook Lopez is kind of what Musselman suggested. So the thing is, I think they just wanted to have options for how to play because – Musselman did a great job of making the small ball thing work for the first three quarters of last season. But, I mean, eventually caught up with them. They just didn't have the depth. They didn't have the size. And now they're going to have options, and they're going to have depth, and they're going to be able to go small, or they're going to be able to go big. And, I mean, it's going to be a challenge in that sense of just sort of honing in on how to do it. But a guy with his track record will be able to figure it out. And so it may not be, you know, clicking on all cylinders out of the gate. But I think this is a team that, you know, finishes in the upper tier of the SEC, no doubt.
David Cobb, his piece on Eric Musselman, rapidly rebuilding the Razorback roster, up now on CBSSports.com. Ruskin and Zach back with you here. It's 26 minutes till 5 o'clock on a Friday. We go to the Williams Tractor Hotline right now, visiting with a former Razorback, a three-time Gold Glove winner with the St. Louis Cardinals, member of the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame, All-Star in 1992. Tom Pagnozzi is our guest here on Ruskin and Zach. Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
Real good, guys. Doing good.
Appreciate you spending some time with us today. We've got a lot of different things we want to discuss. Of course, the first thing that came to our mind was watching this 1998 documentary a few days ago about McGuire and Sosa and the chase. You were there for a lot of that. Did you see that, and did that bring any recollections or stories up for you?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, it was a crazy summer. To replay that, it's been a long time. And it's something that people always ask about, you know, what was it like? And he made a comment about in the middle of it. I said, I guess this was like what the Beatles went through. It's like watching the Beatles when they came to America. I mean, that's what it was like watching McGuire put on a show.
Tom, I'm curious. I mean, the Cubs are in your division, and that thing took off in, you know, mid to late May and then into June, and then all of a sudden it became a home run race between both McGuire and Sosa. I mean, you talk about it being like the Beatles when they come to America. It had to go into overdrive when the Cardinals came in, or you're up in Wrigley. I mean, it had to be insane around the batting cage before a game.
Well, the players couldn't get around the batting cage. It was all media. I mean, it was crazy. McGuire got off to a big jump. I mean, I think at one point he was like 12 or 15 home runs ahead real early, and then Sammy climbed into it, and then it became a race. Without a doubt, when those two clubs played, it was unbelievable. I mean, the game was secondary. BP was first. The game was secondary. It was impressive. I remember in 96 when we got McGuire. I was, you know, the pitchers and catchers always do a meeting during the last group of BP. And, you know, usually the way the BP works, one through four hitters were in the last group. You know, five through eight were in the second, you know, which was my group. I would go in and we'd have pitcher-catcher meeting. And the first day, David Bell came in and goes, God dang, you should see this display. So, you know, I went to Dave Duncan and said, hey, is there any way we could have our meeting before or after BP? And he goes, why? I said, because David Bell told me that McGuire hit 20 balls in the upper deck. I mean, I've seen like three balls go in the upper deck in all those times at that stadium. And so he goes, sure. You know, we all went out there and it was like, holy smokes. You know, and then, you know, it just went crazy.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
98 was just, it was unbelievable. And like we said, when both teams played together, it was secondary, people crawling over. It was electric, you know. I've been to championship fights. It was like that, you know. The stands are buzzing. Everybody remembers where they were standing when McGuire was taking BP. You know, I stood right here during BP, you know. And it's funny because, you know, the people in the outfield at Wrigley, that they hang out there to get baseballs during BP. Not when McGuire came up. They were outside the park going off the building.
Right. Wow. Had to be out in the street. That's right.
Yeah.
We're talking with Tom Pagnozzi here on Ruskin and Zach. So McGuire, where does he rank up in terms of guys you played with as a hitter? Where does he stack up?
Well, you know, what he was unbelievable. What people don't realize is how good of a hitter he was, how disciplined he was. I mean, you know, yes, he struck out a lot. But what you don't realize, you know, they always talk about, you know, man, good hitters, you know, that they don't strike out a whole lot, or their walks to hit ratio, you know. Power guys, usually their strikeout to strikeout to walk ratio is, you know, one walk to four strikeouts. You know, McGuire, I mean, that year he walked over 160 times.
Wow,
that's great plate discipline. That's a lot. That's one a game. You know, they didn't want to pitch to him, and to be disciplined. You know, I do remember he had more extra base hits. Then, you know, he had 70 home runs, obviously, and got almost 20 or 30 doubles, you know, and like 45 singles. I mean, it was a double home run or go home, you know.
I want to ask you, very infamously, when Roger Maris was chasing the home run record, he went through some physical ailments. The stress really got to him. I can't imagine what it was like in 1998, or if a player had to go through it today, where, you know, today in social media, it would be crushing. Yeah. But you had a front row seat for how this affected him behind the scenes. BP's one thing when he's out there just, you know, hitting the ball. But when he's in the locker room, did he change as the season went on?
Well, yes, you could see it. There was days where he blew up and you know, it blow up on non-baseball stuff. Because one, people want to get into your personal stuff. And McGuire was very, very private. So if you tried to get into that, it was going to be trouble. And I remember one night, you know, a reporter asked him, you know, something, and he just snapped, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate, you know, he couldn't go anywhere. He couldn't breathe without someone else wanting some of that air. I mean, it was unbelievable. You felt for him. But on the flip side, you know, we were picked to win the division that year, and we finished 500 or like two or three games above 500. We weren't very good, you know, and nobody was talking about, thank God, because what he was doing, you know, it took the pressure off of us. It was easy for us to go play and watch. You know, you played and then you became a fan when he was up. You didn't miss an at bat when he came up to play. But yes, you could see the stress, and the longer it went, the more draining it was, because, you know, he tries to be cordial, you know, but when, you know, 50 new newspapers are there a day or magazines and want to do interviews and try to get a question, you know, he would stand in his locker room and he would ask. And the thing is, you know, as an athlete, when you're doing interviews, when the same question's asked four times, you get tired of it.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's when he would snap. I've already answered that question. I mean, you know, if they just want a different version because they asked it. I don't know. You know, it's crazy sometimes. But you definitely saw the stress on it, without a doubt.
Yeah.
But that would be anybody. Sure. It's like watching the Jordan 30 for 30, you know. Just, you know, same thing. It was like that.
Yeah. We're talking with Tom Pagnozzi here on Ruskin and Zach. I also wanted to get your thoughts on it seems like the two sides on the current situation are like 10 games apart now on getting baseball started in 2020. Well, if you had a say in any of these meetings right now, how would you bring things together so we could see baseball in this summer?
You know, I sat in that room. I was our player rep for about 6 years. I've been there. I was involved in, you know, the cancellation of the World Series. It's a tough situation. It goes beyond what the players are talking about. They're concerned about their health, about what happens if I get it, and you guys are leaving Cincinnati to fly to New York, and I can't get on that plane, and I got to go back to the hotel. There's more to the moving parts. It's sad that again, we always talk about millionaires and billionaires fighting. It's never good. Nobody ever wins when it's like that. And especially today, with everything that's going on, people out of work and unemployment at what it is. Again, you know, you don't want to see it. You know, we need them to get back to playing. But I also feel on their part, these guys have short careers. Health is very, very important. And they're concerned. And they want answers that they're not getting because there is, you know, they thought there was going to be testing at that time that was going to be instantaneously. It's not here yet, you know. It's not at that level. So you know, there's still concerns, but you just hope that they can figure it out. You know, the NBA said a long time ago they were playing hockey. None of those camps have opened up yet because it's the same issue now. They've worked out their dollars. They've worked out their agreements. But the things about, you know, catching it and the travel and all that is not here yet. And, you know, the NBA, how long ago did they say they were playing? It was 3 or 4 weeks ago. Camps haven't even opened up yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, but we're talking about baseball. Those same things are going to happen.
You're the perfect person to ask this since you've been in those meetings. I mean, we see the public statements from Manfred and Tony Clark. How much of what they are putting out publicly is posturing versus what those real discussions are like? It just seems like they've drawn a line in the sand and there's no commonality between them.
Well, because they're stuck on other issues. But it's about 50-50. You know, both sides try to produce stuff to make one side look bad. Really, you know, the best thing is to put a stop to the talk. Let's get in a room and finish it. The problem is they can't get in a room. It's all done by Zoom and stuff like that. Before, you know, I remember sitting in a room, the negotiating committee, I mean, 18 hours without leaving. Nobody's leaving until we get a deal done. You know, that we were close to it, and that's how the deal got, because the negotiators are, you know, in separate rooms, we meet, go back to separate rooms, meet, back to separate rooms. You got it done, but right now, there's too much information out with social, and you got players tweeting, owners tweeting. It's unfortunate it can't be done privately and in face to face and get it done. Because if they could negotiate like it was back in the days, you know, I think they would be done now. But they're not. It's easy to click off the Zoom and say end the meeting, you know,
yeah,
and everybody go their separate ways. Where before it was, we're not leaving this hotel until we have an answer, you know, until we both figure it out.
And I think you bring up a lot of excellent points there, but one that you talked about earlier is, say someone gets it and you're out for 2 weeks at least, well, that could be 14 games in a shortened season. That's a lot of time missed when certain guys may have different, you know, things in their contract about stats and numbers and that sort of thing.
Well, The one thing in baseball, you know, there's only a few stats you can put in there. I mean, a few award bonuses. All-Star, Gold Glove, MVP, Cy Young, games played.
Okay.
That's the only ones you can't have, averages. You can't have any of those. Well, none of those are going to be attained on the games played. I mean, because nobody gets a 40-game bonus. You know, it's usually at 100 and, you know, more. So those are out the door. Baseball has always been that way, so that, you know, because there's so much strategy in baseball, you know, if I had so many hits and he gave me the bonus sign, I'm missing that sign because I need hits, you know.
It's so true.
They've taken that, they've taken that out, you know. From that standpoint. So, I mean, they're still, it's still a long way, in my opinion, they're still a long ways away. I mean, I think the posturing is more on the player side because they want answers if I get sick. I mean, the scenario that I was talking with one of my buddies in St. Louis, you know, we used, you know, Wainwright as an example. He comes in Sunday night, you know, Sunday day game in Cincinnati and has a temperature, you know, and the team's flying to Philadelphia. What do? Send Wainwright back to the hotel? The hotel's not going to want him. But the charter flight's going to Philly. You don't want to put him on the charter flight. It's things like that that they've got to figure out.
Wow. I mean, you're bringing up some points that, I mean, are deep-level points on both sides. I want to ask you, I mean, you were there in 94 when the season, you know, was cut short. I'm curious, what was sort of the reaction when you guys came back in 95? I mean, sitting here on June 19th, it feels like, to me, a baseball fan, that we're not going to have baseball in 2020. And that means we're going to restart in 21. From a player's perspective, what was that spring and then subsequent summer like in 95 when you guys came back?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's always recovered afterwards. It took 3 years to get back to the attendance levels that we were at. You know, we had, each year up to that point, we were breaking records attendance of overall in baseball. You know, St. Louis is a little bit different, you know, and I played my whole career there. They're the greatest fans. They come. Yeah, they came and let us know that they weren't happy with it. But after a few weeks, that all died down, and we got back to playing baseball. It has always been like that. I don't know if this time, if they can't figure it out, I think there's going to be a lot of changes in a lot of avenues and a lot of things, you know, going forward from here. You know, that's an answer that's a tough one. Where does baseball go? You know, at that time it was number one. Football's overtaken that, you know, basketball's on the verge of coming back, you know, but, you know, where does baseball slide in? You know, there's people talking about hockey's going to become the next thing. I don't know. I don't think hockey ever will be, but, you know, it's going to take some time, without a doubt, especially if it's canceled over games or dollars or something like that.
Tom Pagnozzi is our guest here on Ruskin and Zach. Before we let you go here, Tom, I got to ask you about what we've seen, particularly in the last 4, 5, 6 years with the Arkansas program. You know, a couple of runs at a national championship, new facility going up with the new facility with locker rooms and everything. Just what does it mean to you to see this program thriving under Dave Van Horn?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, you know, you always want the school that you went to be, you know, relevant. I mean, we are now a baseball school. I mean, you could go out to Arizona, California, and you're talking about Arkansas baseball. I mean, nationally, it's a great conference. And I'm telling you, college baseball is about to get even better and more fun. If they move the start date to March 15th versus February 15th, it's a difference of about 15 degrees where you're going to come into the game instead of freezing. It's going to be enjoyable. It's going to go later. The major league draft, they're cutting minor league teams. So a lot of kids that sign that are not really prospects, they're fillers in the minor leagues, they're going to go to college. It's going to make the whole college game better. And think about being here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, you know, really the playoffs start, you know, early June. It's, you know, regionals are overdone by the second week. We wouldn't be starting till right at about the 1st of July. So every night you're going to be playing night games at Baum Stadium 3-4 nights a week in you know, the month of June, the month of July, you know, part of July. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope it happens. Dave's done a tremendous job on the national level.
Absolutely. Well, Tom Pagnozzi, our guest here on Ruskin and Zach. Thanks so much for the time, Tom. We really appreciate it.
You bet, guys. Anytime.
All right, Tom and all our guests join us on the Williams Tractor Hotline here on Ruskin and Zach.
A lot of great stuff in there.
Yeah,
a lot of great stuff.
They really they got to move this calendar back. It just, when you're out there and it's 35 degrees at a baseball game in February when it's, you know, Kent State and Arkansas. I mean, what are we doing here? Come on. March 15th, you get a crowd there. I mean, come on, it's totally different.
Yeah, it's only 45.
That's right.
Well, 45 with a 28-mile-an-hour wind.
You might be in the 50s by March 15th.
With a 28-mile-an-hour wind.
That's right. Something like that.